Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Welcome to a special series here on the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast called She Is Uncompromising. Women are constantly told to sacrifice ambition in order to have the rich family life that we all deserve. That's a lie. When we quietly accept this lie, we kill an important part of ourselves and our destiny. We compromise who we are until we end up unhappy and failing to fulfill God's plan for our life. Total life success means the baby and the business, the thriving marriage and the growing company, purpose and profit, destiny and dedication to the path that is predestined for you. It's whatever makes you happy, whole, and fulfilled. My latest book, She Is Uncompromising, reveals the hard-won lessons and spiritual truths that can help all women take control of their lives. It's filled with poignant scriptures, intimate stories, practical exercises, and it's a must-have blueprint for building an unbreakable foundation of faith, family, and abundance. You can grab your copy today at TatumTamia.com/book or click the link in the show notes. Over the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be sitting down with people who exemplify this same message by being uncompromising in their own life. In this episode, I sit down with Dr. Rochelle Whitaker. Dr. Rochelle is an educational psychologist, licensed professional counselor and supervisor, and a trusted authority on the treatment of mental health issues for women of color. She is a leading champion for empowering parents and caregivers to become strong advocates for themselves and their children via education and implementation of specialized treatment plans that address the unique dynamics of ethnic cultures and communities. Dr. Whitaker specializes in treating women of color suffering from postpartum depression, reproductive challenges, infertility, and infant loss. She is a certified perinatal mental health professional. She has over 17 years of experience in counseling and assessment, providing these services via private practice, social service agencies, schools, and transitional living facilities. In addition, Dr. Whitaker provides training and workshops throughout the city to various social service agencies, hospitals, and private organizations. Dr. Whitaker earned her doctoral degree from Texas Tech University, her master's degree from Sam Houston State University, and her bachelor's from Grambling State University. I am so excited for you guys to hear our conversation today. Let's start the show. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast and another installment of our She Is Uncompromising series where we sit down with women who have inspired me by just being uncompromising in any area of their life. So right now we're talking to Dr. Rochelle Whitaker, and I am so excited to talk to you because I just love your story and the work that you do about being uncompromising about families. And of course, we'll get to your podcast and things that you talk about with raising sons, but I see the work that you do as just being uncompromising about building healthy families. So parents, children, and the whole family unit. And I really wanted to talk about that on the show because I think it's really important. I've already read your bio, so everybody knows all the credentials and all the degrees. Let's start with, how did you get into this work? What made you want to build healthy families?
So I don't know that I initially went into this thinking that. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here too. But I don't think I initially went into it with that intention in mind. I used to work in the school system doing testing for kids who had who were suspected of or who had some type of disability. And so what I realized from working with them was no one was really addressing the root cause of their behavioral issues. And so we know that's it's coming from an emotional place. So I said, well, let me start a practice so I can address the issues. And I loved working with kids. And I was like, I'm gonna work with kids. And so started the practice, started working with kids, loved it. But what I realized was like, I was like, we work with the kids, we get to a good place, we would terminate our counseling relationship, and then they'd be back. And I'm like, what's happening? And so I was like, okay, I need to start from a top-down approach, because what was happening was they were getting better, but they were going back into the same environment. So parents were stressed and having to deal with all of these things. But their concerns and needs weren't being addressed because we were focused on the child. So I said, let me start with, you know, working with parents. And so that not only did I recognize that, but then I became a mom too. And then I went through all the things that that a woman could go through when having a baby: complications, postpartum depression, traumatic birth experience. And so it happened like right on time. So I was noticing what was happening in my practice with kids, coming back and not addressing the issues with the parents. And then I became a mom and I experienced all the things I experienced, and then it just kind of made sense. And, then I realized, you know, I have a heart for boys, for men. And so God has really just been taking me on this journey that I didn't intend to go on.
Did you have some resistance to it? Because I think that's most of our paths. God just does what he does and we're along for the ride. But sometimes it can be scary and it can be a little nerve-wracking to be taken on that journey. So did you ever have any fear or hesitancy to do what he's calling you to do?
Yes, because I had a plan. and so, you know, maternal mental health is something that, especially like in our communities, postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, it's not something that's widely talked about. So when I had my own experience, I had an idea. I knew what I was going through, right? Because I was familiar with all the things dealing with postpartum, but I was reluctant to seek help, right? Because I was like, somebody gonna take my baby, which I say is rational and irrational at the same time, because it does happen to women. And so I was like, well, if I'm having these issues and I know what it is, there are lots of women who don't know what it's called and don't know where to go to seek help or if there's someone that looks like them. So I wanted to become the thing that I was looking for. And that's, you know, that is what I did. And then I was like, I had this whole plan. I was going to have this maternal mental health clinic and all these things. And then God whispered in my ear and he was like, parents. And I'm like, what? What is it? What are we doing here? This is not the plan. And so I, you know, kind of shut down my counseling practice. This all happened during the pandemic. I shut down my counseling practice, homeschooled my sons. And then God just started showing me, just bringing things back to mind that I had kind of forgot about. And I was like, okay. But yes, there was lots of fear, lots of resistance, just because it was so unfamiliar and uncertain. And, you know, when you walk by faith, you don't know what's coming next. You just are like, okay, God, this is what we're doing. What does this look like? I don't know. Mm-hmm. So
how did you overcome the fear? Was it something you pushed through? Did you have to like take a step back and pull yourself together? Or like, what was that process of overcoming yourself to get on board?
So part of it was getting quiet. So I had to go back and look through my journals. And so actually God was answering prayers that I had prayed. So when the pandemic hit, I had been in a PhD program, which I started when my son was six, my youngest was 6 months old. So I had a toddler and I had a 6 month old and I'm in a doctoral program and I had to travel. So by the time I came out of the program, I didn't give myself time to rest. And so what I started writing in my journal was, you know, Lord, I want to spend more time with my sons. I don't think that I need a change. There's something else. And so the pandemic hit. And what I realized was that I had lost myself. So I say that a lot of times it takes a woman about 2 years to kind of get back into herself after having a baby. Mm-hmm. And so not only had I, you know, started school back after having my son, but then you go into a doctoral program and they kind of tear you down to build you up. So everything you thought you knew, you like, well, maybe I didn't know. I don't know as well as I thought I did. Mm-hmm. And so all of those things were happening at the same time. So I really never had an opportunity to kind of get back to me. And then I finished the program and in my mind, it's go time. So let's do all these things. And during the pandemic, what God was showing me was like, I needed to be restored. I needed to really find out who God says that I am and mm-hmm. what his purpose was for me. So that was a long process. And I had to let go of a lot of things. Like I was teaching at a university. I was, in this practice, building it. And God said, let it go. And yes, there were mm-hmm. lots of purple moments, but I was like, well, if I stay here and I'm feeling all this angst, it doesn't feel good. So that's kind of what pushed me to say, okay, well, let me, see what's on the other side of this. If God is on the other side of this, then it's got to be something greater.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love how you talked about having to essentially relearn who you are through Christ. Mm-hmm. I talk on a podcast all the time about God created us for an intended purpose. Like he knew who we were before he formed us in our mother's womb, like he says, but life, circumstances, our own plans, so many different things happen to build us up into something else. And so step one to truly living out whatever God has for you is to essentially be reintroduced to yourself and yeah. who you were supposed to be. And the only way that you can do that is taking a step back, like you said, and just really connecting to him. So I'm really glad that you pointed that out. So you talked a bit earlier about a top-down approach when it comes to building healthy families and how you realized that a lot of the students you were dealing with were going back into the same environment. Mm-hmm. What are some elements of the environment that causes these familial breakdowns?
So there are lots of things, but I think it really starts with the parents, right? Because you can't have kids without parents. Mm-hmm. And so when parents are... One, so I can say this for myself, because when I was going through the struggle and the strife and I'm on this wheel and I'm trying to do all the things and be successful, I had tunnel vision. And so everything was really about, growing this practice. And so my husband used to say, you're with us, but you're not really with us. Mm-hmm. And I used to get offended, like, yeah. What do you mean? You just don't understand because you're not an entrepreneur and mm-hmm. you don't want me to work and just all the things. But what he was saying and what I later understood, God was really showing me myself was I wasn't present. Work had become an idol. Mm-hmm. And so I was there physically, but I wasn't really there emotionally and mentally. And so I think when we are out of alignment with God and with ourselves, then it impacts our family. So I think that's one thing from, as a mom, as a woman, if you're focused on other things other than your family, then it just creates chaos. There's no peace. Because you're not at peace. And so I think that's one of the things. And so I also think lack of communication between the two parties. So really in a relationship, there's this whole struggle with independence. And really to be optimally functioning well with your kids, there has to be an interdependence. Like the husband mm-hmm. and the wife have to be interdependent. And mm-hmm. so you all have to be, it's a team. When you have kids, it's a team approach. And when you start working in isolation, it creates conflict. And so I think, communication, not being comfortable or at peace with where you are, and that could be the husband or the wife, mm-hmm. That creates strife and not being able to communicate well. But that stems from a whole lot of other things, which I will say really at the root cause of that is vulnerability. Nobody wants to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be right. So
mm-hmm. I love that. And I love the level of honesty for your husband to say like, hey, you're not here. And I'm sure it stung because it stung me a little bit because I would definitely be a little upset. But it's that honesty that breeds unity. Mm-hmm. So what are some things that you did to become more present after that?
So that was a long journey. But during the pandemic, I was really able to like get quiet and mm-hmm. Really tap back into who God says that I was. And so when I made peace, because part of my struggle was being on this rat race, seeing that other people are doing this and I'm not moving as fast. And so once I got comfortable understanding who God created me to be and what he's placed inside me, then I wasn't concerned with other people's, what other people were doing, and that need to strive. And that's really, really what changed. When I had peace within myself, peace just kind of flooded throughout my home, and it just kind of made everything better for my relationship and then even with my kids.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I feel like I experienced that too, because even though I might have like a cutoff where I'm not working anymore and I'm home, I'd be tired.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to, my husband didn't say anything, but I was noticing it where I was like, man, I don't like to be worn out while it's family time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not fully present, because I'm not bringing my best self to my family. It's more so what's left over from the day. Mm-hmm. And something I think about all the time is like, how can I, instead of giving my business or the tasks and the things I have to do, the best part of me during the day to my family, getting what's left over, what can I do? And you talked about like getting quiet. And that's something that I've implemented as well. Like, okay, God, what do I need to put down today? What am I missing in my household today by being focused on my ambition or whatever? Reveal to me myself so that I can go throughout this day doing what you called me to do in every area or every hat that I wear. So my family, my business, all of the things. Like, you really have to be in the root of being uncompromising is that relationship with God.
Yep.
Because for as long as you try to do anything without him and without being dependent on him, it's going to be less than what he has for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that every answer has been, I had to get quiet. I had to ask God, because that's what's necessary.
Yes.
We cannot do it in our own strength. We weren't built to.
Mm-mm.
And it's no point of having this, you know, we have the Holy Spirit, we have the word, we have all of these resources to be able to live out this life. How foolish would we be to not use them?
Right, exactly.
To go into a war with no armor on that we have. Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so, so glad that you brought that up. So you talked about moms losing themselves in motherhood and in marriage. How can we prevent that? Because it's so easy to do. And it always baffles me just how, like, you know, we are these individuals before we get married, before we have children. Marriage and children, I'm assuming, are desires of our hearts. So we get these things that we want and then we get lost in them. How does that happen?
I think we pour so much into our families, into our marriage, and into our kids that it happens before we even recognize what's happening. And I think it's easy. I think a lot of women by nature are nurturers. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to pour out. It's harder to pour in. And so it just happens, like I said, it just happens without our, before we even know what's happening. Mm-hmm. I had we used to have a Mother's Day brunches, my mom, my aunts, my cousins, my sister. And so one of the questions that I asked, I was like, why didn't you all tell us that it was this hard? Because looking at them and how we grew up, it didn't seem like they were struggling. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, did we miss something? And they were like, oh no. I mean, as kids, we just didn't see it. Like, my mom was like, you know, sometimes I go on long drives. She's like, I just leave you all with your dad. Like, so, you know, she's like, it would get to be too much. But that's not what it looked like to us. And so now I understand, like, from her vantage point, like, okay, yeah, I understand why you took those drives. Mm-hmm. But it didn't seem like she was struggling at the time. And I think one of the things that we have to start doing more of is talking openly and honestly about how to preserve yourself in marriage and in motherhood. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I asked my mom after I had my oldest son, I was like, well, maybe I need to stop working. By then I was working for myself. And she was like, no, ma'am. She was like, figure out a way to do what you need to do. She was like, you know, pull back on your hours, work less. But she was like, don't stop working. She was like, because you need something for you. And so I'm so grateful that she, you know, she told me that. But, you know, in the Bible, it talks about older women mentoring younger women. And I think we've lost a sense of community. And I think we need more of that, because that's how you keep yourself. You know, if my mom had not told me that, then I don't know if I would have, you know, what business would have looked like, what entrepreneurship would have looked like, because I was having a hard time trying to manage all the things and I wanted to spend time with my son. And I was like, how is this supposed to work? And so I think it's, you know, having other women who've been where you are to say, hey, you know, have you, you know, brushed your teeth? Have you taken 10 minutes to for yourself in the shower? Have you gone mm-hmm. for a walk today? Leave the baby with your husband or leave the baby at the daycare for an extra 10 minutes so you have more to give him or her when you pick them up. So I think we definitely have to do a better job of talking about the struggles that we have and then supporting each other in, you know, making sure that we don't get lost.
That's so good. And we wear these capes, especially as Black women. We're really, really good at powering through. And yeah. It's not healthy. And, you know, the previous generations, they had to. And we have so many more resources and access to things that they didn't have access to. And so it's just so important that we fight to utilize those things. I remember when I had my son and I was looking for ways to just, like, my mom has always been just a great grandparent where I'll call and she'll be like, say less, drop him off. Like, I'm gonna come get him. And I used to feel so bad about that. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm such a terrible mother because I have to drop my son off for the weekend so that I could get a break. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, even when we were just hiring help with to help with him and things like that, I would have moms tell me, well, I raised all these kids while working. And I'm like, okay. And I got to the point where I didn't care. But initially it made me look at myself like, man, am I less of a mom because I need some help? Am I less of a parent because I'm utilizing the resources that I recognize that I have? And there's so much shame that can happen. I keep emphasizing Black women, but, you know, all women, I believe, go through this, especially when you're like a high achieving woman and want to accomplish things. We put ourselves or we put these unrealistic, ridiculous expectations on ourselves. Yes. And it's simply not healthy.
I totally agree that we do put these unrealistic expectations. But part of that, I think, is because oftentimes we're looking at our parents or our moms and they haven't communicated to us that they struggled. And so we think we're alone. No one else is having these issues or, you know, it's just us. And so I think that tends to feed into that shame because then we don't speak up and we're like, okay, I'm not going to drop off. I'm going to do all these things. Mm-hmm. And we're suffering, but we're trying to hold up this expectation or this thought that, you know, nobody else had to ask for help. But of course, you know, we all know that that's just not the truth. And what I found out with working with women in the maternal mental health aspect is that women back in the day struggled too, but they didn't have these terms for it. Mm-hmm. There was so much more community. So you may have lived next door to your grandmother. And so, you know, I've heard women say, well, no, my mom didn't experience anything. And I'm like, okay. They were like, so I'm like, okay, well, you have siblings. So let's talk about that. And so they'll say, well, when my mom had my sister or brother, you know, we spent a lot of time at my grandmother's because my mom would be in the bed. Yeah, she was probably dealing with postpartum, but that's not what was called. And because they had community, the kids weren't missing out on anything. Things continued to flow. So I think it existed even back then, but there weren't these terms around it. There wasn't, I don't even know that there was shame or stigma around it because it was just like, well, you're just going to go to your grandmother. She's next. Just go next door. You know, mama got to heal from the baby. I mean, you know, so I think there's been with the change in how we live our lives and the fact that we don't have community, a lot of things that we were able just to take care of, we just aren't able to do the same things. And so there's all this stigma now because it's like, oh, you can't do this. Well, you weren't doing it before, but no one was making a big deal about it. It's just what was happening.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. You just realized that your business needed to hire somebody yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so that you can reach the people that you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. I've hired many times, and it's always very slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/blessed. Just go to Indeed.com/blessed right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/blessed. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. This episode is brought to you by IXL. In my household, education is so important, and in summer, there's still no breaks. So whether your child is trying to catch up, stay sharp like we are, or get a head start for the fall, IXL can make learning a seamless part of the summer. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning, whether they're brushing up on math or diving into social studies. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies from pre-K through 12th grade with content that's engaging, personalized, and yes, actually fun. It's the perfect tool to keep learning going without making it feel like school. I am so excited to get started with IXL. My son is getting ready to go to kindergarten, and one of the tools that his school uses is IXL for Learning. And so we are so excited to dive in this summer to prepare him for the upcoming year. This program will improve your kids' grades. It will work for any of your kids. You save time and you save money, so don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Blessed and Bossed Up listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com. Visit IXL.com to get the most effective learning platform out there at the best price.
Yeah, my husband's Nigerian, and one of the things that I love the most about his culture is the community and the family aspect. When I had my son, there were people that I don't even know just showing up at the doorstep with food. This is Auntie such and such, and just bringing stuff. Just the door bell was ringing every freaking hour with somebody just bringing something. Even now, like my father-in-law, usually I just tell him and he tells everybody. And, you know, even now, family that I don't even know, buying stuff off the registry, I'm like, BJ, who's this? And he'll tell me, okay, we got to call them and say thank you. But just the community is what I love, because like you said, it's so important. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's an American thing, but with other cultures, community is a huge part of it. And I wish that's something that we would kind of step into more so that we can utilize the different resources that we have. And you're providing some resources. Usually I do this at the end, but I think it's a good time. You're providing some resources too. I want you to talk a bit about the resources that in the communities that you're building for dads and for moms and parents of children with disabilities.
Yeah. So what I've seen is dads are oftentimes left out of the conversations. They're left out of, you know, the whole, when you talk about parenting, most of the time you think about moms, but dads, there are dads that are very present. Mm-hmm. I think they tend to get the short end of the stick just because they're not as expressive. Usually they're less communicative, so you don't hear about, you know, their struggles. But what I've seen is even with dads, you know, dads can experience postpartum. And so I talked about postpartum. I took it to the barbershop because when I was practicing, what I was noticing was when women were struggling with postpartum, it wasn't the women calling. It was their their spouses or their boyfriends saying, hey, you need to tap in, or they're calling me, asking me questions or setting up the appointments. And so I was like, well, let's find out what men know about postpartum. And so we took it to the barbershop, and there was one barber, I won't say by happenstance, divine intervention. He had just had a baby. And so he was struggling because his girlfriend wouldn't let him see the baby. And he was like, can men experience postpartum depression? And I was like, yes. And what he said was, if you hadn't come in here and talked about this, who would I have talked to about it? So from there, I know that there's space needed for men to have conversations about the struggles that they're facing. A lot of times as women, you know, we think about ourselves because we're thinking about, you know, we're carrying the child. And so all of the things, but men they're experiencing stressors from having a baby too. It just looks different from us. And I think that oftentimes gets left out of the conversation because they're not communicating. And so they're thinking about the finances and, you know, long-term. I hear men all the time talking about, okay, well, I have a baby at, you know, 25, then I'm gonna be on the hook for the next 18, 20 years. I got to get them through college so I can't retire. So, I mean, they're thinking about all of these things from a financial provider standpoint, and it's not any less important. And so, you know, wanting to give rise to them and having a support group for dads who are new parents or just dealing with all the things that men deal with. And along the same lines, I noticed also in working with kids, with families, diagnosing their kids with different disability conditions, that dads oftentimes had the hardest time accepting the disability. And then it's like, well, they can't, you know, moms a lot of times are proactive. Let's jump into it. Let's do what we need to do. And dads are like, oh no, you know, they're hesitant, or they're saying, you know, it's not my son, not my child. It happened more often with sons. Mm-hmm. But it's like, where do they get to let down their hair and talk about some of the fears and the struggles they have with having a child with a disability, the uncertainty, what they don't know. And I don't all of the time know that they can communicate that with their wife because she's going through her own stuff. And so they tend to stay quiet, or sometimes they leave. And so it's wanting to give them space and room, a safe space to be able to talk about these things so that we can keep our families together and we're better together.
Absolutely. So tell people where they can go to be a part of the events and the sessions and things that you're doing.
Sure. So the website is Take Your Next Steps. When you get to the website, you can go down two pathways. There's a pathway for corporations, and then there's a pathway for parents, or we call it Next Steps at Home. So you can, you know, take the pathway to home. You just click on the button, and then it'll open up to the different services we provide for new parents, parents of children with disabilities, and then parents raising sons.
Got it. Takeyournextsteps.com.
Yep. Takeyournextsteps.com.
And I'll put the link in the show notes to make it convenient for everybody too.
Awesome.
So I want to pivot a little bit and talk about sons. Of course, I say one and a half sons, one on the way and one son. So of course I've always loved the messaging. And I want to know, what made you want to focus specifically on raising sons when it comes to your podcast and then one of the pillars of your business?
So I have had a heart for boys. I can't even tell you. It really started with my cousin. So I have a cousin that's a few years younger than me. He's a grown man, but he was diagnosed with ADHD long time ago. I never could understand when we were younger. He would do the craziest things, and then he would get like spanked or in trouble, and then he would turn around and do the same thing again. And I was like, stop it. Why are you doing this? And so, you know, we later found out that he had ADHD. So speed up some years. My aunt came to live with us. And at the time she was going into transitional housing. And so he must have been around 16. And so he couldn't go with her because he was too old. She made the decision that she wanted to do this her way and on her own terms. So her and her kids were going to, she was going to, you know, go into transitional housing because my mom was like, no, I want you to stay. She was like, nope. And so my cousin had to go to a shelter. He had to go to a separate shelter, and it broke my heart. And I wasn't, at the time, I wasn't old enough to be able to do anything or have him come with me. And it really broke my heart. And that's really kind of where it started. My heart for boys started there. I think I've been on a quest to save them ever since. Mm-hmm. And then I had sons, which is so interesting how God kind of works everything together. Mm-hmm. And I did. I had not long ago, I asked God, like, God, why did you give me sons? Because I really believe that there's purpose in God giving you the genders of the kids that you have. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I have a full answer, but one of the things that I did notice, my husband and I were talking about buying a rug, and he ordered the rug, and I was like, that wasn't the rug that I was talking about. And when I told him that, his face, like, it just, I can't, it's hard to communicate, but the look on his face was like kind of just distraught, like just disappointment that he didn't, when I said, that's not the rug. And it was like, at that moment, God was like, you know, you're a voice, because I don't think that parents, especially moms, know how much weight we carry for our sons. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Lord, that's a lot of responsibility. Like, I started kind of freaking out when I understood it. Like, after that experience with my husband, I was like, man, that's huge that I have this much power. Mm-hmm. Even with my husband, like, he was just really kind of, his face just was like downtrodden because I was like, this wasn't the role. That's not what we talked about. Mm-hmm. But we have so much power with our words, with our sons. And so we have the ability to either build them up or destroy them. Yeah. And I was like, okay, we need to, they're, you know, like I said, it was this whole thing with God. And I'm like, oh, that's a lot. That's a lot of responsibility. But there are so many, I think, parents, especially moms, that don't know the power that they have with their sons. And, you know, there's all of these things about toxic masculinity and men not doing this and men not doing that. Well, they start off as boys. And so if we don't recognize and pour into our sons, then, you know, our sons become one of these men that these women are talking about. But then I also think, do moms ever or women ever think about, you're talking about men and how they're toxic and all these things, but you're also raising a son. So are you making the connection between, you know, boys will become men. So how are you raising your sons? And there's all these different idiosyncrasies that come with raising boys that, I mean, I grew up in a house, I have an older sister. So there's lots of things I didn't know. And I'm still learning. But in order to raise healthy, you know, emotionally healthy and whole sons, there's so many things that you have to know. And so I always say, you want to start with the end in mind. So I'm like, well, as I learn and as God shares with me, and as I, you know, my husband tells me different things, I want to also share that with other moms who, you know, may not have a spouse or whose husband may not be sharing the same things with them. Mm-hmm. Different things I'm learning as my sons communicate to me what they need.
That is so good. One of the things that I love that you talk about with the podcast and even your Raising Sons manual is how to have certain conversations with your sons. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go into talking to your sons about Christianity, about consent, about racism, all of these different tough conversations that we have to have. I remember my parents, I have a brother, they didn't talk to us, neither one of us, about sex. They didn't talk to neither one of us about, I know they didn't talk to my brother about consent. They didn't talk to either one of us about, like, encounters with the police, or we just didn't have these necessary conversations. And a lot of things I feel like all of us, me and all of my siblings, had to just learn. Mm-hmm. And I love how you, in the background that you have, you're able to teach and break down the way that we have these tough conversations at every developmental stage, right? Mm-hmm. So talking to your toddler about Christ, and then talking to your teenager about Christ, talking to your child that's about to go to college about Christ. And I love that, because even with us, with our son, I'm always thinking, like, how do I instill Christ in him at two? And one of the, and we just winging it, of course, being first time parents, we were just winging it. But small things like praying with him every night, getting a little Bible stories, one of those little board books for babies. My husband will just read scripture, like he'll just break the Bible out and just read scripture before bed, or praying with him. So now our son will recite, "Now I lay me down to sleep," like he'll say the that prayer, or he'll throw a scripture out there, and I'm like, "What are you? Who taught you Psalms?" And that's just something that they do in their bedtime routine. But I didn't realize that I could teach him about Christ that young, if that makes sense, because I didn't think he would understand. But just those little intentional things. And I love that. And I think the core of everything that you've spoken about and that you're doing is just about being intentional. Can you speak a little bit about just some ways that we can have these difficult conversations with our sons at every age?
So the biggest thing, I think, or the ways that we can do these things is we have to create space for our sons to be able to want to come and talk to us. And how we do that is something that I recognized and realized was, you know, a lot of times we're busy. We're, you know, trying to get our kids out the door, doing this or that. And oftentimes they want to have conversations with you at the most inopportune times. And so when you tell them, come on, get your bag, and you don't stop and acknowledge the fact that they want to have this conversation, the likely chance that they'll come back and have that conversation with you is next to none. Because if you think about it, if you think about it as an adult, if you're talking to someone and you're trying to convey something to them and they shut you down and say, I have to go, or I can't talk right now, the likely chance you're going to bring that back up to them is next to none. And so as an adult, though, you're more conscious of you're choosing this because of this. Kids aren't, they just won't, they'll just not share. And so when we're busy and they're wanting to have conversations, you can say things like, let's wait till we get in the car, or let's pick this back up later. I hear you. You want to validate the fact that you're hearing them, but you know, now is probably not the best time. I'll tell my sons before bed, because one of my sons is a night owl. And so he likes to come and have these deep conversations at 9 o'clock, and I get up early, so I'm like, listen, I want to talk to you, but I'm tired. Let's pause and have these conversations in the morning, because I'm not at my best self. And I'll tell them. And so I think it's important to create space for them, to be honest with them. And so just like I told him, like, this is not a good time. I'm tired. You're not gonna get the best of me. So let's just table it. You know, being honest, being open, and then being vulnerable. So being vulnerable looks like you saying, I'm sorry. So if you make a mistake or they don't understand something and you kind of lash out at them, it's coming back and saying, you know what, that wasn't the best way to handle it, and I'm sorry. A lot of times though, parents don't. And so it makes kids think that they have to be perfect, or you're perfect, and they put you on this pedestal. So when they're messing up, they're less likely to want to come and talk to you about their, you know, failures or mistakes, thinking that you're going to hold it against them because you're, you know, you do everything right. So
that's good. I love that. It reminds me of one of the parenting styles I read about, conscious parenting, where what I like about that style, from what I've read, is just, it's all about just self-regulation, making sure that you're whole as a parent, being intentional and mindful of what's going on and adjusting accordingly. And that's something that it'd be top of mind for me, because I'm like, I don't know why we put crazy pressure on myself, and I'm like probably the president of that. But I'm like, I can't mess him up. Like, I can't. I just want to give him a life. You don't have to go to therapy to recover. But I'm glad that, you know, there are people like you who are providing these resources. Can you talk a bit about, well, you mentioned earlier working in the schools. So what are some ways that as parents we can protect our sons. And I'm thinking more so about the older parents, because this is something I think about when my son is getting ready to start school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, he's going to be out the house. So how do I protect him? And even for the older kids too, from social media, from their friends' influence, with all of these things that are speaking to them and trying to create them to be something. Mm-hmm. How do we as parents make sure that our voices are heard, especially with these young boys? Because we have the school to prison mm-hmm. pipeline and just all of these things with these boys, man. How can we make sure that we are the dominant voice?
I think just, you know, as I was saying before, having that open, honest, vulnerable conversations with your children, with your sons, I think it's important to, one of the things that I've learned is that technically at all times, but when my sons leave, you know, being with me there, I can't control it. So what we do in the morning times is that we pray. I started praying with my sons in the morning time, and I'm asking God to cover them, to keep them. And so prayer definitely is one of those ways that we can, you know, protect our sons. But also when we talk about social media, it's having conversations with them about what they're seeing and hearing, mm-hmm. so that you are the resource, that you are the source. They want to come to you first, or even if they hear something at school, they want to come back to you to, you know, ask questions. And so you want to be that open space. You want to provide that safe space where they can come and ask questions without feeling judged or like someone is gonna, like you're gonna penalize them for asking things. And so I think that's important. My son has shared some things with me. Now they share a lot of stuff and I'm like, OMG. It's also responding, how you respond. So if you freak out when they start telling you stuff, they're not gonna tell you. Sometimes I'm like, I'm glad we might be in the car and I'm like, oh Lord, I'm glad my back is to them, because I'm on my face, I'm just like, what? I did, like my youngest son, and this is kind of funny, but he told me that one of his classmates was dating. And I'm like, how are you dating at 8? he broke up with, you know, such and such, and they were all upset and they were crying. And I'm like, what? Oh my gosh. What are you talking about? And then he was like, what did he tell me? He said, his heart, his head was for one girl and his heart was for another. What are y'all watching on TV? But, you know, I mean, it was funny, but it also gave me the opportunity to have a conversation with him about, okay, so, you know, tell me more about your thoughts around this. And what were you thinking and what did you do?
Where your heart and mind at?
Yes. And so I think it's times like this when our kids come to us about stuff that's a little extra, that we can, you know, use that to have conversations with them about like where they're thinking and what their thoughts are. And I think in those kind of interactions, that makes them want to come back to us instead of looking to social media or, you know, other things. Something else happened the other day and my son was like, so my 8-year-old shared with us that one of his classmates started her cycle. And I'm like, how do you know? He's like, oh, the girls told us. And I was like, oh my gosh, where's the discretion? So I'm like, do you even know what a cycle is? And he's like, no. But then my older son was like, oh yeah, it's this, this, and this. And I'm like, how do you know? I'm like, you know, so there will be times where your kids are going to find out about things. But the fact that my oldest son was able to say, you know, he was sharing, then it's my time now to go back to him and say, okay, let's talk about this. What do you know? So it's using, you know, kind of letting them lead and you following, and then using that as an opportunity to, you know, find out more and have them tell you what's going on. And then you coming back and saying, hey, make sure you can come to me and ask me questions if you have questions about this. So it's really creating that open space and dialogue where they feel comfortable enough saying all the things.
I love that. That is so funny. His head and his heart hurts. That is hilarious to me.
I was like, what are y'all doing in this? What do you have this time? Like, what is happening?
They watching The Bachelor or something with their parents. So, I mean, I love all of this. And these are the things that you talk about on the podcast. So tell us about the podcast, where people could listen and what they can expect from the show.
So the podcast is, it's on Apple. It's really everywhere that you can listen to podcasts. And the podcast for me is a labor of love. And so I'm just like, I'm telling you about stories that my sons are sharing and the things that I'm using, to help other parents, in raising their sons, is what you'll hear on the podcast. And you'll hear me give like tips and strategies, for different things as they come up about, you know, raising sons. And I think you kind of, pointed to some of those things, like having difficult conversations or talking about death. Because these are things that I think a lot of parents have a hard time, like, knowing what to do or where to go, even talking about puberty, how to have those conversations. And so, you know, that's what the podcast is centered around. And it's really the message behind the podcast is starting with the end in mind. So, you start thinking about what kind of man you want your son to be, but you have to start early, thinking about that and then putting that into place, so that they can become, you know, you're instilling in them all of these different morals and values and character traits that you want them to exhibit later in life. And so that's really the foundation of the podcast. And so,
So the podcast, everybody, is called Raising Sons. I'll put the link in the show notes everywhere you listen to podcasts. And then if you want to work with Dr. Rochelle and her team on things that you may be going through with the parent advising sessions that she has or the programs that she has for dads and parents of children with disabilities, go to takeyournextsteps.com. And the link for that will be in the show notes as well. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rochelle, for being here. This was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Yes. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the Blessed and Bossed Up podcast, and I'll talk to you next week. In our interview, we mentioned the different opportunities that you can work with or learn from Dr. Rochelle, but I forgot to mention that she has her Raising Sons manual that is free. The Raising Sons manual was created to make hard conversations easier, to provide reflective thinking, and to offer tools and resources that enable us to parent our sons with the end in mind. Raising Sons is different, and it's her hope that this manual serves as a source of support on your parenting journey. So click the link in the show notes to download your free copy today.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.